Bookers, come on down. You have stumbled upon a pot of word salad at the bottom of a sometimes inappropriate rainbow. At the controls are indie authors Cintra Sullivan, Kay Banning Kellum, and David Atherton Cooper. I'd like to say they know what they're doing, however, as the official voiceover guy, I have sworn an oath of fealty. Welcome to the What the Book podcast, where scripts and pants are optional.
Hey, bookers, here we are again. Episode 10. We have hit double digits, guys. Double digits. Can you believe it? When I first approached you, would you have thought, oh, we're actually going to make double digits with this? Did you have the faith in it that I did, guys?
I would not. I wouldn't be here if I didn't have the faith in it. So absolutely.
Thanks.
Absolutely from day one, but it's good to see. Good to see that we're still going and getting better all the time.
Now, check out our new intro. Wasn't it fantastic? Of course, I want to give a shout out to Jordan Ashley Moore, which his Twitter account is at Ancient Lit Dude. That guy's voice would rival Caleb's for a penny drop of voice. Smooth as, loving it. Thank you, Jordan. If any of our listeners want some voiceover work, Jordan is the guy to go hit up because he has the voice of a legend. All right, so today, I think we'll just get more views from that intro alone, personally. But today we're talking writing advice. All right, writing advice now. Good and bad writing advice. I put up on my Twitter account that when I was a fledgling author, I've had so much shit advice on the road to writing. And one of the ones that really stood out to me was, your words are colourless and you should consider a career change. Now, at this point in time, I hadn't actually published anything. This was just from a fellow author who had published a number of books, so they were definitely who I considered firm and successful in the industry, and this was their advice to me.
Sounds like a shithead of a human being right there. They may be firm in the industry, but it sounds like they're a firm asshole.
Well, this is the thing though, isn't it? And this is the reason why I really wanted to discuss this topic, that as authors, what we say to each other can be just as important as what we say to ourselves.
Absolutely. And what they're saying, how does that help you get better, improve, correct whatever they think is wrong with what you're doing? And sure, their opinion is their opinion, but how does it help you if that's all they say?
Well, this is true. And R.S. Rutherford did reply back to my thing that perhaps that I need that who the fuck is using coloured fonts anyway. So he did make light of it. And, you know, in hindsight, it is certainly an amusing statement, which I can laugh at it now. At the time, though, it really rattled a new author. Caleb, have you ever had advice that rattled you as a writer?
Advice, no. And one thing, you know, advice is so shit almost everywhere that you get, because most of what you see out there, anybody who knows me knows I have a special relationship with the Facebook writing groups, as in I fucking hate them, but I'm still in so many of them because it's like a car accident. You don't want to see it, but oh my God, you're going to slow down and rubberneck just because it's there. Most of what people pass off as advice or criticism is neither. Most of it is unsolicited opinion. And then they get really touchy when you don't fucking just love every word they say. And they go, oh, well, if you can't take the criticism. And it's like, but you're not a goddamn critic. You're just somebody with an opinion. A critic is somebody who actually has skill and, you know, experience in the fucking field that they are criticizing. Siskel and Ebert were in movies for a long time behind the scenes. You know, they understood how movies work before they could ever sit down there and tear one apart line by line. So the casual opinion should not be confused with advice or criticism. I have received good advice when it has been solicited advice from a trusted source and I knew what I was getting into. But I've also received a lot of really bad, I guess, commentary in the guise of advice. And usually it's funny to me because I'm like, how can this even be advice if I did not ask for it? But I have been told, like, one of my comments, I was looking it up, is you made something from a decent meme into a shitty, boring drag. Good job. That was actual feedback on something I wrote.
Wow.
Been there.
Whoa, somebody got out of bed the wrong side that day.
I think that, I don't know. Judging from the anime avatar, I don't think they got out of bed at all that day. But, but yeah, I mean, like I said, that's my big thing. So most of the advice, like I said, is just really terrible because most of it's not advice. It's not actionable. They're not looking at what they're reviewing and saying, okay, let me give you actionable steps to improvement. Because your example right there, the colorless word thing, that's not actionable advice. That's not telling you what to do to correct what they saw as a deficit. That's just them just mewling out into the universe about what they did not like.
Yeah, I got a slightly different one. So one of the guys I gave one of my stories to and said, oh, have a read. It's just a work in progress. Tell me what you think. And in a way, it was good because he told me exactly what he thought. And he just said, I couldn't read past like the third page because I just got confused. I'm like, oh, okay. But then wouldn't elaborate on what that meant. It took a long time for me to, and it rattled me. I'm like, because I read it, it's great, it makes sense to me. And eventually we did dig into, and he sort of said, oh, you know, there's too many characters happening all at once. I couldn't follow a thread of the story. So it became useful advice once I dug in. But just to be told, you know, oh, I got confused, it didn't help.
No, it wouldn't. And the thing is, though, like there's one... MLW London, a beautiful writer. I love her. She wrote here that somebody told her that her insert fantasy creature is wrong. That's it. It's wrong. I'm sorry. How can advice be to tell somebody that their fictional character is wrong? I had it once where, because I had a I have a werewolf who's a vegetarian. She's anemic. It's not her it's not her fault. It's the way she was made. But I had them tell me that she cannot be vegetarian because she's a werewolf. Well, like, fuck, of course she can. She can be whatever she damn well wants to be.
I love the fact that they're able
to... fantasy creature be wrong?
And I love the fact that they're able to process the werewolf. They're fine with that part, but the vegetarian, that's where they get hung up. They're like, God damn it, I just can't picture the fucking vegetarian aspect. But the werewolf part, they are fucking just on board 100%. Yeah, that they can do.
We can go big hairy dude or hairy lady in this case. That's fine. What, you don't eat me? Oh, now you're just stretching the fantasy here. Just what the fuck? No, the thing is, though, advice that I see running around. Now, I've had some beautiful advice. Don't get me wrong. But advice can come from somebody's ego more than their intention to help you.
Oh, of course.
Where you get a person who feels threatened by you, that it maybe perhaps is intimidated by the uniqueness of your story or the way that you write or the style. Who knows? There's a myriad of bloody things that they could be intimidated. They might be intimidated you because you know you're 6'3". Who knows? But that threatening nature that is interpreted only by them could come back as a negative. You know, they may use it to bring you down.
It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to get the real when it's written. So if it comes in as a tweet or a DM or an email or whatever it is, it can be, maybe they don't even intend for it to be triggering and challenging. But when I get something that says, yeah, nice, but don't give up the day job.
Yeah, you can tell.
That could mean all sorts of things.
No, that's somebody being an asshole right there. There's no two ways around that right there. You can tell when somebody is just there's a horror author out there who I've spoken to a time or two named Mike D, and he is an absolute powerhouse in horror writing. I mean, this guy is a true talent. And he is legendary for giving extremely harsh advice, but he will not just go around giving it out and let you have to ask him pretty much to review your stuff. And you pretty much have to know what you're getting into. You know, if you want Mike McDee to read your shit, he's not going to hold back. So you don't get to be angry at him if he goes full on Gordon Ramsay on your ass. But he's not just picking on people, you know, saying this was trash, like people were reaching out to him. And he does give, it's extremely harsh and it will burn your soul, but he does do it from a good place. He's not going to tell you, hey, quit now because you're fucking doomed to be trash forever. He's going to try to do something for you, but he's not going to be wearing the kid's gloves when he does it.
See, I do that when people come and ask me, "Hey, Central, will you read this for me, or will you, be to read, or even just read a short story or a chapter or whatever the fuck it is?" And my first, if it's the first time that they've had contact with me in requesting this sort of stuff, my first answer back to them is, "Do you want the pretty stuff or do you want me? Because if you want me, then you can't come back going, 'Oh God, you." What, you didn't like it? If I don't like it, I'm going to tell you. If I don't like it, because writing is subjective, like everything. But if I do say that, or I don't actually ever think that I've said to somebody I don't like their writing. However, I may have said, constructively, you may want to develop up this side, or this character is a little bit one-dimensional. And in being one-dimensional, perhaps this might be a better way to approach it, or whatever. And of course, every time I give advice, I always add the aspect that it is simply my opinion. It is not gospel. I am not a guru in the industry. I am just a chick in Australia who writes some weird ass stories. That's it.
So that kind of, it was an interesting one. So not having received this directly, but just looking around, as I tend to do from time to time, Googling around, how do you be a better writer? How do you improve what you're doing? And there's a few sites out there and a couple of YouTube clips where they sort of say, well, find yourself a C, a CP or some CPs and get some beta readers. But not many of them then go on to sort of talk about how do you approach people to get them interested in even taking a look at your stuff. Because yeah, I can email a whole bunch of people or sort of put random tweets out saying, hey, who wants to read this? And you get responses from a whole bunch of highly random people. Try to take that idea and work out how to do it
Beta readers
practically
should get
hard.
paid, I think. If I'm going to ask somebody to beta read something that's very long, unless it's a really good friend of mine that loves my fucking work, I will usually try and compensate them for their time because, one, I want them to do a good job. You know, I don't want them to
Yes.
fucking speed read through it just because they said they'd do it and now they feel like they have to honor the commitment. No, it's like, look, I'm going to pay you. And if you do a really good job, I'm going to come back and pay you again to do some more shit for me. So I try to form that relationship because, you know, I see a lot of people, and this is one thing I wanted to touch on. There's another side to the coin when it comes to writing advice, and the other side is the person asking the question. Once again, going back to my dear beloved, I wish departed Facebook writing groups out there. God, they're terrible. I just hate them, but I can't stop joining them. People come in there and they ask, they do not know how to fucking ask a question. And it's just as annoying as the bad fucking advice. People that pop in there and they're just like, hey, so like, how do I write better scenes? And I'm just like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this question? Like, I just have to keep scrolling because I do consider myself to be a talented critic of sorts, and I do consider myself to give good advice. So if I'm doing it, I'm doing it as a task. And if I'm doing it as a task, that means the time is valuable. And I'm not going to sit there and waste, 10 minutes writing down like you need to ask better questions, more concise, more precise, more well thought out questions. No, people just pop in there like, how can I write gooder? The fuck? Like, and that is a big thing. I try to tell people that, like, figure out, don't look at your big problem. Don't say, how can I write a novel? Jesus Christ. Look at one big problem and break it down into the little solvable ones and say, okay, how can I write better dialogue? That might be easier to approach. What do you guys think about that, asking the questions?
Oh, you've got to ask a specific question because no one's going to, as you say, how do I write gooder? no one's going to respond. But if it is a case of, this is a thing, I've got this character, I've got this scene, I've got this idea, and I'm not sure about how to do this piece or achieve this effect, or I want it to feel like, getting down into those smaller bite-sized pieces means that people can respond. And sure, they'll respond with their opinion and you might not agree with it, but asking the big ultimate question of how do I write won't get a sensible answer. But something nice and specific possibly will, I guess.
I look at it this way. If you can't frame a question to pinpoint it directing-wise, I can't pinpoint an answer to help you. You generally ask a question like, how do I write a book? Fucking one word at a time. There you go. There's my
answer. That really is. I think I've actually said shit like that before.
Yeah, that's as vague as the question. So, if you want to ask a question, pinpoint it down. Now, the problem is, of course, so if you were talking beta readers, now my beta readers, I have four that I trust explicitly. Three of them have been with me since book one. One has come on recently. Now, they, with my beta readers, I don't pay them. I compensate them. They all get books off me and any merchandise or any shit that I'm trying to, use for promotional basis. They have access to all of my books. They can have what they want. However, I don't pay them physically in a dollar-tree amount. But I also do not send full books to them. I use my betas read in 10K lots. So the intrusion on their life is minimal. That they can knock over a 10,000 word part, in an hour or two.
I mean, that's a novelette. That's easy. I mean, you can bang that out, in a few hours if you read slow.
So I send it to them in small doses. And now the bonus with that is that I get feedback as I'm writing. So the development,
that's when you need it.
Go is fantastic. They go, really not feeling that chapter. It's shit. Don't like the character. He's doing this and he shouldn't be doing that. And I'm reading back going, okay. Or, fuck, he's doing what I told him to do, whatever. But the feedback that is continuous through the story. So for me personally as a writer, that works really, really effectively using beta readers. But
we talked about this way back, I think, in like episode 2 or 3 about when you get reviews and feedback. If you've published and someone leaves you a review, well, that's feedback that you might have wanted when you were in the middle of writing it, but hey, too late.
Exactly.
At that point, it goes to like what Sintra has said, that is for the reader, not the writer at that point, because there's nothing the writer can do with it once the book's already out.
Exactly. And if I use them along the way, and I don't use the word use them in a bad context, if they, contribute to my development along the way, then I can pick up plot holes, I can pick up flaws along the way, which makes my writing easier at the end product. Some of the things on the Facebook one was that, this is an old one, and I do believe this was started by one of Caleb's most favorite authors. If you don't write every single day, you're a failure. Well, I say, fuck that. I swear to God, I will. I don't care who said it. And you know who said it. You know who said that one.
Oh, geez. Him? Was it him? Oh, fuck me. Oh, my God. It's the one whom we don't speak of.
I am not
the truth that dare not speak itself.
I do not feel that you have to write every single day. If you do, then
of course not.
That is brilliant. If you can't write every day, well, fuck, we have lives, people. There is influences outside our book world that sometimes just stresses the fuck out, and we cannot do it. And you should be okay with that as an author. It's okay to take a break. It's okay.
Well, that right there, that if you don't write every single day, you're a failure bullshit. And whoever, and to who said that, I hope they fucking hear this, because here's the deal. One, that's shit advice. That's just absolutely fucking shit advice. But that's also that same pretentious bullshit gatekeeping crap that I brought up before that plagues the writing groups and all that kind of stuff. That's the same kind of fucking assholes that'll sit there and beat you over the head with, you know, show, don't tell, don't use adverbs, don't blah, blah. That's the same kind of motherfuckers that you see all over the place that just fuck it up for everybody else. I'm gonna tell you, if you're ever gonna stand on any kind of pedestal where you can pick out failures from successes, you better be goddamn Mark Twain level fucking Stephen King mastery kind of fucking person.
It was Stephen King, Caleb.
That said, if you don't write every day, you're a failure.
Yeah.
Well, then he can say it. Then fuck it, he's got it.
But again, so this was one I hoped that this would come up. I was going to ask you guys your opinions on this one. Because to me, you know, try to write every day. Let's word it that way. Try to write every day.
Yeah.
To me, felt like good advice. Because even if you're not writing your actual story, writing something is a good practice. And a chance to just doodle, experiment with stuff is great. And doing something every day feels like good advice. But at the same time, if you word it as you're a failure if you don't write every day,
that's it.
That's hideous. So is it just down to the way it's said?
Yeah, absolutely. It is.
I did not realize that was a King quote. Holy shit.
King. He said that you had to fail. You have to write every day. A good writer should write every single day. And it's just, and he can stand by that one. I don't agree with
But that's different from you're a failure if you don't. A good writer should write every
yeah,
day.
I mean, I'm trying to find the actual.
That's kind of positive.
I was referring to now which one of our people who said that. John Paul McGowan said it.
Yeah, he's the one who said it.
But it was Stephen King who said that you should write every single day.
Right, but did he say? Did he phrase it that you're a failure if you don't write every day?
I believe that was the exact wordage that Mr. King used. Because right. I'm not about to logistically put my ass on the line in order to get a Stephen King spanking.
Well, each to their own, I guess. Okay, so what do you what?
Listening by all means, you know my number.
So what do you guys think of this one, just quickly? Because here's one that I thought I liked. And then I thought became a bit snide. So what do you think? Commas are like thorns on the stem of a rose. Watch out for them or you'll prick yourself.
I'm a big comma addict, so.
I mean, that's just, it's not actionable advice. I mean, it's too flowery, pardon the pun.
Yeah, the tone's not great.
What do I do with that? I mean, if people have a problem with the commas, then explain that, you know, here's the best way to fucking use them. As opposed to trying to make some kind of fucking smart ass analogy out of it. Like, commas are technical parts of composition. That means there's a technical way to use them so you can actually explain it. You know, it's like, what was that little rhyme back in the day? It was like, you know, the complex sentence one. It was like, a cat has claws at the end of its paws, and a complex sentence has a clause at the end of its claws, or whatever. That actually works, though. At least that explains how it all goes. But trying to compare technical writing to a flower, you know, it's like fucking Shrek talking about ogres or fucking onions. I mean, the fuck, no, they're just assholes.
I'm a comma whore, and it's one thing that my editors always comment on, the fact that you really like the comma, don't you? Oh yeah, I just write, and then if I pause, I go, oh, comma, right here, let's go on. Oh yeah, comma there. Oh, yeah, let's put a comma there. I don't care.
Yeah, if you read it aloud and you take a breath, you stick a comma.
Exactly.
In it.
There you go. That's my writing technique, people. That's my writing technique. Feel pity for my editor. Feel pity for them. Now, one thing that before we cut to our author interview, there was one comment here from Matt Seeley Poems. Now, Matt is a very good friend of mine, and he writes amazing poetry. Now, I don't think poets get enough recognition or validation personally. And he's been told things like poetry has to rhyme. Bullshit. Poetry.
Rubbish.
Rhyming poetry is then childish. Bullshit.
Nah.
Don't. Just don't. You know, stop writing about this one. Stop writing about depression is just attention seeking. Ah,
Oh, get a life.
Kidding me.
Yeah, that's bullshit. That is so bullshit.
Poetry and writing in general is all about, I mean, we've talked about this a few times, about evoking emotions out of people. If you're feeling some specific emotion and you can convey it through your words, whether it be a novel, a novelette, a novella, a poem, I don't care. If you can convey that emotion correctly and your reader pick it up, brilliant. You are successful in what you are doing. And
whether it's done to exercise your own demons or simply to elaborate and reach someone else, who cares?
Well,
if it's good and it's effective, it's good stuff.
How many times is writing used in therapy? Write a journal. Get your emotions out. Same process. A lot of people use their novels or their, you know, poems or even in the VSS to use it as a therapy base. And I think that sort of advice for Matt was shit, personally. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't undermine, it doesn't cheapen, it's good.
So I always have, like, my go-to advice, and I'll throw it out there real quick just because it never really changes. And I'm also trying to find the Stephen King quote because I feel like I have to defend him at all times. I think he got a bad rap on this.
Back to the second half for me.
Right. Oh, yeah. We'll defend Stephen King on the second half. But no, my advice is always, you know, don't break immersion. That's the big fucking thing. And I remember I gave some really good advice when somebody asked about something really crazy, like, how do I write a novel? And I think I said, you just write like about 15 fucking like novelettes and boom, you've got a novel, as long as it all takes place in the same universe and the same continuity. And they said that that really helped them. So that's my smart brain.
My go-to advice to people is listen to yourself. You know what your story is going to be. You know how you want it to be. Stay true to you. Take advice from people. Listen, sure, whatever. But if it doesn't apply to you or it doesn't feel right for you, don't fucking do it. Use your common sense and follow your gut instinct with your writing. That's my go-to advice. But anyway.
I love it.
Yeah. And mine is just write it. Write it until it's done. And then go back and change it with the edits if you need to.
Absolutely. Get it out because you can't change it or you can't clean it up if it's not out. That sounded kind of kinky and dirty, but I'm still going to leave it in there. All right.
Damn right.
Our guest author this week, Bookers, is John Paul McGowan. Now, this was a fascinating interview. This guy was so complex with his screenwriting and his virtual theatre productions. Oh, blew my mind. I hope you guys listen and enjoy it. And we will be back shortly, Bookers. All right. So here we find ourselves at one of my favorite parts of the week is our author interviews. Of course, I have Kay Banning Callum with me. I'm sorry, Caleb. Hi, darling. How are you?
Good. How are you doing tonight?
I am good. Good, good. And our guest author this week is John Paul McGowan. Hi, John Paul.
Hello. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolute pleasure. You fascinate me. So I was quite excited to when you said, yeah, I'll come and do it. I was like, yes! Because you fascinate me. And, okay, I will also say that I wanted to hear your accent. I'm sorry, I'm an accent whore, apparently. So, you know.
Not a problem, so am I. I love listening to people speak.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. I like to, and when I did the read your book and plug yourself that way, hearing all the different accents and the way different, we all said different, it's just fascinating. I love it. Anyway, on with the show. Now, on your Twitter profile, you claim yourself to be a jack of all creative arts, which I think is fascinating and encompassing all aspects of this. So when did you first develop the love for the creative?
It was early elementary or grade school. Right around age 8 or so. Before that, I was kind of a serious young man or serious old man in a young body. They're very kind of straight laced, you know, serious. This is the way things are. This is the way they think should be. And then we started getting into the creative writing and the poetry and things like that. And I think that's where it really took off, because I just started writing voraciously and kept up with it. I knew it, you know, at an early age that I wanted to be involved with writing in some aspect or some respect. And I kept up practicing. My early stuff was, of course, horrible. And, you know, it was fun to me at the time, and I enjoyed doing it. And I kept exploring different ways to write in different mediums. And I discovered theater in middle school, junior high, however you want to call it. And that kind of opened up a whole new avenue. Because before, whereas this really shy, introverted, reserved kid, theater allowed me to explore different voices, different modes of thought. And I got to play around a lot more. And it was a safety net for me, because I could use somebody else's words to express things that I was feeling, until I found those words for myself. And then
Let's talk about a theatrical production that you just recently put together over there on the old YouTube channel. Tell us about Godmother. What's that all about?
When I moved up to Dallas in early 2000s, I got involved with this melodrama theater called the Pocket Sandwich Theater, and it was just the best thing I'd ever done. It was audience interactive, and I wanted to write for them. And I asked some of the producers, directors there, what genre or what fairy tale or story hadn't been done yet. And they didn't have a Cinderella story. So in 2001, when I wrote this, the Sopranos was still big. They were, you know, kind of at their peak. So I had heard the joke that the fairy godmother was basically just a mafia don who could get you what you wanted. So I kind of took that joke and made a 90 minutes, you know, play out of it, and just had so much fun doing it.
I love that. That's awesome, man.
Now, I saw it being recorded. I was privileged, humbled to be allowed to sit in and watch it being recorded. And then I also watched it when it was uploaded on YouTube. It is one of the most classically brilliant interpretations of Cinderella I think I've ever seen. I loved every single second of it. And the artists involved were just amazing. I can't speak any higher of it. I think it's everybody should watch it. It's fantastic. How hard was it to, because you did it on Zoom, didn't you, first?
And yes, yeah.
How hard was it to organize everybody to be on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it was a cakewalk or it was easy, but it was a lot easier than I expected. The only real issues we had were time zones, oddly enough, because while a lot of the actors were in Dallas or the surrounding area where I'm at, I had two people that working on the show that were in Wellington, New Zealand. And just getting the time sync correct, that was the biggest challenge. And then, of course, you know, the technical limitations, getting Wi-Fi, you know, making sure everybody had a stable connection and everybody knew how to work their equipment. But we had a few rehearsals and about, you know, coming in, making your entrances, making your exits. And it really didn't turn out to be as difficult as I anticipated. And we all had a lot of fun. And I think that was the biggest easy spot for it, was that we all had fun with it.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, time zones are something that Caleb and I, and David as well, we fight with those ones all the time, don't we, Caleb?
I was going to say, he preaching to the choir over there talking about time zones.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm having to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning to try and caffeinate enough for an interview at 5:30, I'm like, what? I hate time zones. They do my head in. I can't get around it. And to be the one that's the most difficult one to, because I'm over this side, and it's just weird. So tell me what you're working on at the moment, John Paul.
Well, I wanted to get back into prose. So I took a play that I had written last year, and I really loved the world of it and the ideas that I came up with. It's a steampunk adventure set in the early 1900s, late 1800s. And I had so much fun writing the play. I wanted to explore different avenues that I could take with it. So I thought doing the old pulp novel, chapter books, like the old John Carter of Mars kind of thing, and taking those characters and introducing them to much grander problems in a bigger scale, something that I couldn't do on a stage.
I like that a lot. So when you're going into something that's, you know, comprehensive and creative like that, that really requires a lot of different nuanced approaches there, where do you find, you know, you spark inspiration, and how do you kind of hold on to that? How do you ride that fucking horse all the way
through? I listen to a lot of steampunk music, actually, and get into kind of that mindset and that tempo and that, just that kind of fun frivolity. It's just the music I listen to. And then I also just take a look at the people I've worked with. Some of the characters were based off, you know, actors that I've done many shows with, and I just kind of directed them in my head and putting it onto the paper. But music, pop culture, you know, art, that all plays a big part in it. You know, in addition to music, there's a book called Dr. Gorbort. I'm probably butchering that, but it's a steampunk artwork. And I drew a lot of inspiration from that as well, just for, you know, feel, you know, the world feel.
It's funny, steampunk's one of these genres that I haven't tackled yet. And it fascinates me. I'd really like to tackle it, but I don't know enough about it. But it's music's certainly something that I think a lot of us use to direct our thoughts into the right avenue, depending on what you're writing. I assume Caleb would be the same. If you're writing something horror-y, you're not going to be listening to a Mary Poppins soundtrack. I don't know. Maybe you are. Maybe that makes you feel murdery. I don't know.
Hey, look, you find the inspiration where you find it. It don't matter. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Full of something makes the murder go down. I don't know.
Damn right.
John Paul on Twitter. The first thing I noticed about him, of course, was his profile picture. And he has, seriously, if there was ever an award given for this, John Paul McGowan would be number one trophy holder, absolutely best looking beard up all the time. Was this intentional?
I'm going to say yes.
There you go.
Growing hair was one of the few talents that just came naturally. But, you know, I just started letting it grow out a couple of years ago, and, you know, nobody around me really minded that much. And then it kind of morphed into being Santa Claus.
It's
so I use the beard.
And it doesn't come naturally to everybody, because I have tried and it doesn't happen for me. you know, saying it comes naturally, sorry, it doesn't.
But it is. I can grow a great goatee, but I cannot grow like a great beard. So I just have to fucking settle for either a hairy chin or nothing at all.
Well, completely bald faced, I look like I'm about 5 or 6.
Oh, really? You know, you've got the baby.
Oh yeah, I got a real big baby face.
Oh. The beard is impressive and certainly grabbed my attention. Right, probably I am a beard fan. Oh, you know, whatever. But yes, I think that's the award that I would give you straight off the bat, is best looking Beard of Twitter. There you go. It's a big call.
Well,
it's a big
call. I appreciate that.
I'm going to put it down.
Congratulations, my friend. Wear the title with pride.
I will.
It should be added to your profile. May... Come on.
I'm probably going to do that tomorrow.
All right, Caleb, you have a game for us to play.
Yeah, we're going to, well, you know, like, some people got like three truths and a lie or two truths. I mean, I guess it would be two truths and a lie, but that sounds so shitty. You guys know the damn rule. It's three truths and a lie. You tell three statements and three facts you give out there. Right. One of them is a lie, and it is up to your cohorts here to figure out the false statement. Guests first, as always, here. John, if you would like to give us yours, and we'll try to figure out what your bullshit is.
Okay. Number one, when I was in college, I sang the United States National Anthem at center court at the NBA All-Star Game.
I believe that one.
No, no, I'm going to wait. I need to have all three before I can stuff this out. I'm not convinced yet. Go on.
Okay. Number two. I was named John Paul after two of the Beatles because I was actually born, or my mother went into labor while she was listening to the White Album.
Number three.
And number three, I have been produced around the world. I've been on stage in two different continents and had my own work seen by an international audience.
God. All right. Play.
I'm going number two. Number two is bullshit. That's my call.
All right. Which is a lie?
Yeah, number two is a lie. John Paul was just an old family name, French name.
I love it. Totally plausible, though. Honestly.
I was like, nah.
All right, Caleb, you want to go next?
Oh, no. Yeah, I guess I'll go next. I'm going to keep it easy here. All right, here we go. Number one, and this is where it really sucks to have an IMDb because y'all can probably fucking just look this shit up. But here we go. So, number one, I was hired on to star in a ghost documentary shot back in 2004 here in New Orleans called Ghost Detectives that never aired. Number two, I was on Animal Planet's Most Extreme. Number three, I was an Eagle Scout when I was in grade school.
Oh. What do you think, Jean-Paul?
I'm going to go number three because, you know, Eagle Scouts are usually a little older. And I've been to New Orleans, and that one's really plausible. With that voice, I could definitely see him on television.
All right, good. I'm going with John Paul. Number three is bullshit.
You guys are absolutely fucking right. I would never goddamn be a fucking Boy Scout. Jesus Christ.
I can't imagine you being a Boy Scout. I'm sorry. I just can't. All right. Let's see if I can fool you. All right. Number one, I was born with a tooth and my entire family gave me the nickname Fang, and to this day am called Fang by my parents. Number two, my grandfather was chauffeur to King George VI and actually played peekaboo with Queen Elizabeth II in the car while he cleaned the windows. Number three, I met Pink at her Australian concert and she told me my name was beautiful and wrote it down. Which do you choose?
Well, number two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What? Shit.
Number two's got enough detail that it's plausible.
You go first, John. What do you think?
Even though number two sounds plausible, I'm going to go with that's the lie because I know how talented she is with coming up with yarns. So
I'm going to go with number one only because, Like, I feel like that would have come up in conversation. I had never heard that one before. So that's
okay, so Caleb, you think number one's a lie, and John Paul, you think number two's a lie. Is that right?
Correct.
Oh, you're both wrong. I am. I was born with a tooth. My grandfather was chauffeur to King George VI. I have never met Pink because I've never been to a rock concert. I am a total rock concert virgin.
Ah.
Nobody has.
You sat down and really. You sat down and rehearsed the shit out of them damn questions,
totally
didn't you?
I totally did because I had to win. You know my desire to win, Caleb. Come on.
Obviously, yeah.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you, John Paul, for joining us on What the Book this week as our guest author. I wish you the best on your adventure. And please tell our viewers where they can find you. Where can they hunt you down?
Well, I'm kind of slow on the social media uptake, so I'm on Twitter. I've got a YouTube channel that I just post my daily musings about mental health and things like that. And I am actually going to be doing more of the virtual theater table reads coming up, and I will post those as we do them.
Awesome. Your Twitter handle, of course, is at CoolFrood1. 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 Make sure you check him out. Listen.
Thank you very much.
And if I need to get in on these table reads. How do I do that? I'll talk to you in DM. I'm totally on board with this.
Okay.
Thank you, Caleb.
Excellent.
You are an awesome co-host. And
thank you.
We will check back in the normal podcast shortly. Thank you, guys.
Excellent. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Good night, guys.
Bookers, welcome back. That was an incredible interview. Very honored to be able to sit down and talk to John Paul. He is a fabulous, fabulous content creator. Just does a little bit of everything. He is way too cool for school, so I'm really glad I got to go to his class there with Zentra. Welcome back once again, Zentra David. We're back ready to dig right on back into this. And let me tell you, I'm going to kick this second half off right now by redeeming my boy, my man, my idol, Stephen King. I found the quote. I found what he actually said. It was an interview with Business Insider. All right. And he did not tell nobody that there is going to be no failure. What he said was that when he starts to work on a project, he doesn't stop and he doesn't slow down unless he absolutely has to. He writes every day. Otherwise, his characters go stale. So, whoever told John Paul that he would be a failure if he didn't write every day, fuck that guy. Because that guy wasn't Stephen King. That guy took and messed over Stephen King's wisdom. Fucking just perverted it. So boom.
We are talking about a guy who probably has just a little bit of time on his hands to write, given that he's Stephen King.
We don't talk bad about Stephen King around here.
Honor, that's a good thing.
In defense of John Paul and myself, we didn't actually... I said that John Paul did not quote Stephen King. He made a quote, but he did not quote Stephen King. Nah, and I made quote to the fact that Stephen King suggested we write every day because that was the way he did it. I never mentioned that Stephen King would say that you were a failure, but okay, you can redeem your boy if you have to. It's okay.
I have to. I just got to do it. Us horror folks got to speak.
God, I tell you what, Bookers, right now, because I'm a Queensland girl in Australia and it's fucking hot. It's supposed to be winter and, well, not quite winter. It's supposed to be in autumn. It's not fucking autumn. I'm sitting in the back seat of my car sweating my ass off because I have four children who are at home because of ISO and I can't find a quiet spot to be. So, God, I'm so hot and not in a good way. Anyway.
Our heads over the border. We're already getting cold.
Not in a good way hot, I tell you. You can send some of that chili stuff up, David, please, because it's just not pleasant, not pleasant. Now, we at What the Book want to celebrate the world of Twitter and the Twitter community as a whole. And we have, David, Caleb and myself have chosen a tweet each of the week that we like. I'm going to start off, boys, because I feel the need to. Just stealing the light.
Absolutely. A little
bit. Now, my tweet of the week was from Eric Alpa. His Twitter handle is at that Eric Alpa, A-L-P-E-R, that Eric Alpa. Now, his tweet I found very enlightening, considering that we have a lot of time on our hands at the moment and a lot of people are bored as batshit, which can allow, more replies that really don't need to be done. So his quote or his tweet was, before you start an argument with somebody on social media, ask yourself if the anger, resentment, or spite or envy is worth it. And then ask yourself how valuable and irreplaceable your time is. And then walk away. So taking that, it is fantastic advice, because I see a lot of frivolous arguing going on in the Twitter community sometimes, or a lot of the time, especially lately, where people are just itching to have an argument for the hell of having an argument. People, take a breath. Take that energy, bottle it up, put it into your novels, write the books. I don't know. That's what I'm
saying. Or just go jack off or something. Shit, I don't know. Anything's better. Literally.
Go find a Vincent Vega GIF, put it up there, express yourself creatively. Don't just sit and argue with people. There's no need. There's no point.
I love it. I love the way that we come at this. Both, I've gone, write a book. David goes, go find the Vince Vega. Caleb, go jack off. All right,
go jack off. It's the best thing you can do sometimes. Give yourself a hand.
All right, Caleb, you tweet. Let's go. What's your tweet of the week?
Oh, mine? Oh, mine is so damned epic and insightful here. Y'all best be prepared. Sit on down now. This comes from the very beautiful Amanda Stockton, at Batwomanda. It's like Batwoman with a T-A at the end, so look her up. She says, it's time to eat pie in bed. And that's goddamn true. I mean, like, fuck, why wouldn't it be? And that can mean a couple of different things. Sometimes people say eating pie, you know, The Rock back in the day used to come out talking about poontang pie. And what are you talking about? I've had some poontang pie in bed. And let me tell you something, there's always a good time for it. So thank you, Amanda. What are you talking about? Cherry pie or apple pie? It is so good. You can put some whipped cream on any kind of it too and just make it better. So like there, look
just
at that.
Just don't use cutlery. Use cutlery. Bad idea.
All you got to do is laugh it up.
Hot and steady in the back of this car for that discussion right now.
Hey, thank you, Amanda. Amanda Stockton. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Amanda Stockton, you're making me hotter in the back of this damn car now, because now all I can think of that is one fucking erotic tweet all of its own. And boys, eat the pie in bed. All right, David, your tweet of the week.
Yeah, don't tell me you didn't get that from reading it. Look, it's a little pedestrian by contrast, but VK Trichler, and I think she sent this directly to you initially, Zintra, right at the top of the chain. This is about being an avoidance date, which I do a lot of. So never have I ever. And this has exploded. It's gone all over the place. But I deeply love the response that came. Never had she played Never Have I Ever for authors with anyone. So the game time seemed dangerous and exciting. She threw out a Hemingway. He countered with a Hamnet. And suddenly she realized it was just an alphabet game disguised as a literary one. She left in disgust. And that was at writer Dickie responding, but there's been some beautiful responses on here. And all of you guys who have not been south of the border, we're back to Caleb and his poontang pie, possibly. Get yourselves to Australia. It is a supremely bizarre land, but well worth the effort.
Oh, it is. What was your Never Have I Ever?
There are so many. I am your typical penetration phobic straight male.
Right.
I have never ever had a tattoo, but this year I'm going to be seriously old and I will be getting one. I have finally come up with a design that I still like 6 months later.
Fucking ink up, David. I love it. What was your never have I ever, Caleb?
I didn't do one. I didn't know I was supposed to put something in there. Like, what was, so you play this game, it's supposed to be like, well, I'm supposed to say something I ain't never done?
Yeah.
Is that the idea? God damn, man. I got 40 years of fucking depravity under my belt. Shit, that's going to be hard to goddamn come up with. Shit, I've done a lot.
Nice.
Fuck, man. I've never had an Egg McMuffin. That's the truth right there, because I don't like eggs. So
never had an Egg McMuffin. All right.
Yeah, McDonald's. Never had one before.
And mine was never have I ever seen, touched, or played in snow. It's on my bucket list. It's massively on my bucket list.
Zintra, go find the map of Tasmania, head down there, play in snow. It's fantastic.
Are we still talking about Pine Bed?
You might be.
Look, if you're going to have pie in bed, sometimes you might want to, you know, sprinkle a little bit of snow on top of the fucking mountain peaks, you know, if you flip them over, you know.
Oh, my God. You're right. You know, okay.
A little bit of nose candy that ain't never hurt nobody kind of enhances experience so far, I found. So, shit.
You never played Ice and Fire?
Oh, Lord. I'm going to bring this back to some kind of out of the gutter discussion here, boys.
Well, look, since Caleb got to quote his guru and his god, I think I should do the same.
Right, yeah.
Because I found this week something, and I can hear him saying this. Neil Gaiman is my favorite author of all time. I love his stuff. And he just says, the joy of being an author is the joy of feeling I can do anything. There are no rules, only can I do this with confidence? Can I do it with aplomb? Can I do it with style? Can I do it with joy? I actually thought that's just beautiful.
Yeah, I like
it. Printing that out. I'm sticking that on the wall so I can see it every time I write.
That sounds good. All right. So are we doing a quick search game, Caleb? Are we doing
We always going to do a little search game here, always. Now, we got to step this up a little bit because I feel like I've been getting some softballs. I'm not throwing softballs, so y'all don't need to feel like y'all got a fucking hold back.
But I don't think we've really held back much on this second half. But you know, okay, all right.
So Caleb, I think really you need to read us out whatever tweet you find when you search for map of Tasmania.
You want me to search map of Tasmania?
Is that
my challenge? Okay, map.
It should be map of Tassie, but map of Tasmania will do.
Okay, now Tasmania is spelled T-A-S, right?
Correct.
Mania. That's actually an account called Map of Tasmania. There's actually a specific account. I'm starting to think this fucking means something that I don't get over here, but let's see here. Oh, I see. Oh, it does mean something for y'all. Okay. I say. Okay, so here we go. The first one, this one's real easy here. This comes from Scandroff at Scandroff. And he says, that's representing Australia's island state of Tasmania, most famous for the Tasmanian devil and inspiring the phrase of map of Tassie to describe a woman's pubic hair, almost passé in the era of depilation. What is depilation? What is depilation?
The removal of hair.
Ah, they couldn't just say fucking in the era of beauty. Shaving?
Yes.
Oh, depilation. You can tell that guy. Oh, geez. Come on, man. That is a... All right, I'm going to look up map of Tassie and see if I get something a little juicier.
I looked up map of Tassie. It's a cute picture, the first one.
It keeps trying to change it to map of taste. Hold on. Come on now, which is probably not completely... I did not know that you guys used Tasmania, that damn island there, to represent fucking crotch, man. I give y'all credit. Whatever you come up with some cool shit over there.
Get onto YouTube, Google Amanda Palmer, you'll hear the song, it will make sense.
It has the same shape. It's all very logical if you look at it.
All right, I think I got, yeah, okay. I mean, look, people would over here say the state of Louisiana, where I'm born and raised from, is shaped like a boot. People say Italy is shaped like a boot. Y'all got an island over there shaped like a vagina. That's a good way to step it up. Give y'all credit on that.
If it's island, leave it alone.
It's an island, right? But it's
It's a
also a
vagina.
state. I always have to forget that you guys have states too.
Yes, we do. It's a
Okay, here's
state.
Amanda Palmer. Here's one actually from her. I just went with top tweets instead of latest tweets. And she
Right.
says, in crotch news today, I love that. That is the best way to start a fucking tweet right there. In crotch news today, the map of Tassie remixing madness has crept onto YouTube. Check it out. Who is Amanda Palmer? She's apparently famous.
What do you
Very.
mean, who is Amanda Palmer? She's the lead singer of the Dresden Dolls.
I
Well, she
don't.
was. She's gone indie
Who
now.
are the Dresden Dolls? Clearly, I am behind. She's got a billion followers, so clearly, I'm the one
Have
that's
you
not.
been living under a rock? What? Oh, we are going to have to talk about this.
All
Clearly.
right, David, I've got a tweet for you, a word for you. Well, I did, and
Was so erotic that it disappeared.
was possibly erratic.
I just Googled it, like I just did it, and it didn't turn out anywhere near as kinky as I thought it would. And see, this is the story of my life, people. Is that I go, oh, that's a kinky word. Okay, that's gonna get up, and then I give it to one of you two, and it's just nothing. I am a soft ball thrower, apparently. Oh, okay. Let's go.
No pressure here.
Banana slug.
Banana what?
Banana slug.
This is a Queensland thing, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
What have we got latest on banana?
Well, I had thought of initially I wanted snail trail, and I thought, oh, there we go. No, it didn't. It really wasn't.
Snail trail's only good when you read Viz.
Yeah, I was vastly disappointed
Biden.
by the tweets of Snail Trail. People, pick up your game. All right, go on.
But banana slug. I'm just getting political stuff. Biden could pick a dead banana slug as his vice president. I'd still vote for him to get Trump out of office. Well, look, that's a sensible stance we could all get behind. But really,
I'm not very good at this game, Caleb. I really.
but at Astro KN Ort just says, call me a banana slug. Call one yourself, dude. You've got the numbers. Oh, man.
I think maybe when I came up with this idea, I just thought that people were going to be more perverted, like from their tweets. But then you search the stuff and it's like you really have to look for, like you really have to fucking look for this stuff. I don't know, man. People out there get more fucking dirty, man. Shit.
Well,
Get
I would have thought
dirtier.
snail trail, right? I know
Snail
where
trail
my mind's
probably would
going.
have gotten you something good. Maybe you should have gone with snail trail. Let's see what
Well,
snail trail.
because I
Let's see.
did, and then it.
Nothing good.
No, I went to the garden, and really, it's not the kind of garden that I was intending, but you know what
Yeah, it was probably like an actual gardening post. Like, yeah, I was out there this morning picking my prunes, and the damn old snails done come back through again. All
Yeah.
right, you ready
Well,
for.
yeah, but if have you guys found Face Pubes guy yet?
Who's this?
So
No.
you look for Snail Trail on Twitter, and you will get at This Offends Me TV. Shizzy said I'd be good at diss tracks because all fucked up shit I say. Man said I just have to make it rhyme. So looks like I'm taking everyone on. Prepare for my nuts to drag across your cheeks. Gonna leave a trail of sweat like I'm a snail. Nobody is safe.
Nice.
That is pure poetry. All right.
See, now I feel
Hats off to that guy.
validated. I feel validated now because he used the word diss tracks. Shizzy
All right.
said
Well,
I'd be good at diss tracks. Oh, I love him. I
all
love
right.
him.
Are you ready? Are you ready for yours?
Oh, God. Okay, hang on. Yeah, hit me with it.
All right. Look up, pay pig.
You know that you terrify me, don't you, Caleb?
Look,
K has hit
I'm just playing to win. PayPig, PayPig.
Oh, PAYP. Oh, God, help me.
It's gonna be dirty.
It's always dirty when it's with you. Oh, do I have to read out the first one? Brandy Ray?
Brandy Ray. Well, the first one for me, I'm seeing is let's hit our refresh buttons here at the same time. We'll get on the same page here because I think we had different people.
Mistress Boona?
Now, see, Una, that we would just be advertising for her at that point because I think that's just. Let's go to.
What about Alpha Male Ken?
No, I want no. Brandy Day is the one, man. Let's hear. Brandy Day. I love it. Yeah, Brandy Day, April 29th. Ooh, her at name is awesome too.
Brandy Day, April 29th. Bitchy ass Brandy. At bitchy
ass Brandy. That's Brandy with an I, folks.
Oh Lord, the things that I have to do. I want more sissy subs approaching. Let a real bitch teach you how to be. What's this fine fin sub ebony dom pay pick? Oh, is that all those little hashtags on the bottom? Yeah. So I want some sissy. I want some more sissy subs approaching. Let her
yeah. Oh, Brandy. Oh, we need to get Brandy. We need to try to get Brandy on the show. We gotta get one of these folks to come on show. All right. So a FinDom. FinDom stands for financial domination. So these are people who basically get sad, lonely losers to just send them money, and I guess they make fun of them. Which I'm like, I'll fucking do it for free. Shit. And I'll make fun of y'all goddamn day. But no, I mean, if I can make money off of doing that shit, off of basically just being ass, hell yeah, I'd do that. More power to them. Human ATM, fucking right.
This is interesting, though, because, okay, I've heard, of course, your doms and your femdoms. Now, they are some fascinating ladies, I must say. But I've never heard of a findom before. Now, that is an interesting concept. I would like to write a book about a findom.
We should totally do a show
days
about
of Corona,
it.
Where it's all non-contact, then it's got to be online.
Oh, it's all tap and pay. Where are they swiping? Oh, for God's sake, where are they going to swipe?
Contactless payments. It's all the rage. Just
tap it. I think I nominate a future topic right here for show. We should talk about like erotica and how it has become larger than life and actually something on the internet that you can just get on involved. Because I think erotica writers, I know we've had one on as a guest, but I feel like we just need more. Erotica is such a fascinating little subgenre of the literary world, and I love it.
I think we could definitely do an erotica podcast, but we may have to put up. Oh, I always put the explicit thing up anyway, so you know. Because
is that what the E stands for?
There may need
is that
to be a trigger warning.
Oh man! Hey, look at the one right underneath Brandy Day from Jade Torres. I like this one. She goes, I'm hungry for a long, hot drain. Step up, cucks. Yeah, you fucking cucks. She wants a hot drain. I think that means she wants you to drain them balls.
All the money, one or the other.
Oh, my God. See, this was the original way that I wanted to play this, was not that we just all take a turn doing one, but that literally we go back and forth until one of us, and basically whoever gets to the first tweet that they just can't read, that's the loser. It's kind of one of those things where you just keep stepping it up, keep stepping it up, keep stepping it up. Like, look, Katie at Princess Angel K says, stop fucking lurking and start sending, you cucks. Your money is the only thing that makes me wet. See, I'm willing to read that shit.
Caleb, you need to write an erotic book.
I've used erotica in horror. That's what I love about writing horror, is that you can, you know, you can work everything into it.
Oh, okay. Rightio. Well, I think this is going to be the end of our podcast today, boys. But I am so hot and sweaty in the back of this car. I think I'm going to pass.
I'm hot and sweaty sitting in my bedroom right now just from this podcast.
I would love to thank Caleb, Kay Benning, Callum, where can we find you? Tell the people where they can hunt you down.
Oh, hunt me down all day at BanningK1979 on Twitter. And in my pinned tweet, you can find all the links to all the bullshit. Come and indulge in the King of Schlock's Kingdom of Bull.
Beautiful. And David, Atherton Cooper, where can they find you?
Out on Twitter, you can find me at Kung Fu Ponder. And I have a domain name now, but I still don't have a website. So at some point there will be dakwrites.blog, but not quite yet.
Very nice. And you can find me hot and sweaty in the backseat of a car in Queensland. And if you want to find me on social media, just type in Cintra Sullivan. She'd be everywhere. Come hunt me down. Of course, What the Book Podcast at WTB Podcast. Find us, stalk us, give us some feedback. And, oh, yeah, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And we will see you all next week. Thanks,
good
guys.
Night.
Bye, bookers.
Yeah, bye-bye.